Good morning. Today is April 8th, and I would like to call to order the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. We have a quorum, and the first order of business, of course, is approval of the minutes of April 3rd. Has anybody had a chance to review the minutes and wants to move the minutes?
I will move the minutes, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Chair Scott. Chair Scott moves approval of the minutes of April 3rd. Is there any discussion to the minutes? All in favor of approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Thank you. So today we are here to do a walkthrough and take testimony on on House File 2300, and we have before us the DE amendment to House File 2300. The DE is labeled A25-0061. So that is before the committee here, and it was posted, I think by Sunday night it was posted, so the public should have had an opportunity to take a look at it. And so we will not be taking any formal action today. This is simply to have a walkthrough so the public and the committee understands what's in the DE and to take testimony on it. And then we will be adopting the DE and taking amendments on Thursday. So the deadline for amendments to this bill, to House File 2300, to the DE, and that's how the staff will draft them if you submit any amendments, will be 4 p.m. tomorrow. So make note, if you hear something today that you think needs to be fixed, 4 p.m. tomorrow is your deadline for amendments. So with that, we're going to turn to a walkthrough of the amendment, the A25-0061 DE amendment, and the spreadsheet. And first, for the spreadsheet, I'm going to turn to nonpartisan fiscal staff John Walls. Mr. Walls.
Thank you, Madam Chair. All members should have a spreadsheet in your packet. I'm going to go through the House recommendation, which is the gray column on the right. The committee was given a target of $30 million for the 26-27 biennium, and $30 million in tails for the 28 and 29 biennium. I'll begin on page one at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court had a base of $49 million per year, and to that we added on line six.
Mr. Walls, could you please move the mic a little closer and speak louder if you can? Thank you.
Madam Chair, the Supreme Court had a base of $49 million per year, and to that we added on line six an increase for insurance and compensation of $867,000 per year. That is ongoing. We added lease costs on line seven. On line eight, a one-time appropriation for cybersecurity needs. That was $3.5 million. A one-time increase for digital accessibility, that was $1.124 million. And on line 10, $4 million for a justice partner access request. Moving down to the Board of Civil Legal Aid on line 14, they had a base of $34 million, and to that we added on line 17 a $1.186 million annual increase for insurance and compensation needs. On line 22, the Court of Appeals, they had a base of $15.25 million. On line 25, we added to that for insurance and compensation, $270,000 a year ongoing. And on line 26, additional money for lease costs. Moving to line 30 for the district courts, they came in with a base of $384 million. To that, we added on line 33, insurance and compensation at $8.4 million per year. On line 34, there was a one-time amount of money of $10.634 million for a psychological services deficit, and this money will be available for 4 years. On line 35, for an interpreter deficit, we gave them $2.58 million one-time. Again, this money is available for 4 years. On line 36, they had a request for a jury pay deficit. This money is also available for 4 years, and the amount is $1.576 million. Moving down to line 40, the guardian ad litem came in with a base of $25.6 million. To that, we added on line 43 insurance and compensation at $758,000 per year ongoing, and we added two FTE for volunteer guardian ad litem supervisors. That is $229,000 in fiscal year 26 and $247,000 in fiscal year 27 and ongoing. On line 49, the tax court came in with a base of $2.271 million. We added on line 52, $31,000 for insurance and compensation, and on line 53, a small amount for lease cost increases. Moving to the next page, under the Uniform Laws Commission, they come in with a base of $115,000, and they had no request for increase. On line 63, the Board of Judicial Standards came in with a base of $645,000 per year. To that, we added on line 65, $8,000 a year for insurance and compensation, and a small amount for lease costs on line 66. On line 70, the Public Defense Board came in with a base of $164.36 million. To that, we added insurance and compensation increases on line 73 of $2.77 million per year. On line 78, the Human Rights Commission came in with a base of $8.889 million per year, and to that, we added on line 81 insurance and compensation increase of $174,000 per year. On line 82, a $7,000 lease cost increase beginning in fiscal 2027, and we reduced their funding for some unused appropriations that they were had asked for trends reporting, and that is being eliminated. On line 87, the Office of Appellate Counsel and Training came in with a base of $1.56 million per year, and we are including on line 89 House File 1862, which reclassifies some of their employees from the original fiscal note when this board was created, and that reduces their cost by $199,000 per year. On line 93, the Competency Attainment Board has a base of $10.9 million. They are not currently at full employment. They're still hiring, and so their insurance and compensation was $265,000 per year, but that was put off until the fiscal year 2027. On line 100, the Cannabis Expungement Board has a base of $5.356 million a year. Similarly, they are not fully staffed yet, so their insurance and compensation increase of $15,000 was delayed until fiscal 2027. On line 107, we have the fiscal note for the sealing of judicial property records, House File 2127, and that is $18,000 on a one-time basis in fiscal year 2027. Madam Chair and members, to fund some of these one-time needs or one-time spending items, there were three cancellations that were made, and these were for anticipated balances that would be available at the end of the year. The end of this fiscal biennium. These agencies still have the ability to spend, so it is possible in the future these cancellations may be reduced and there would be a corresponding reduction in the one-time spending. But currently those cancellations are $2 million for the Appellate Council for Parents. We are reducing, and these reductions are to the current biennium, so these are fiscal 24 and 25 reductions. The Cannabis Expungement Board, a cancellation of $10 million, and the Competency Attainment Board, a cancellation of $11 million. Madam Chair, that brings us to line 120, and the total spending for this committee with the base plus increases is $717,278,000 in fiscal 26, $717,314,000 in fiscal 27. You see the forecast base on line 2022, and our total is our spending is $30 million over that forecast base, and that is meeting our target both in this biennium and entails in the 28 and 29 biennium. And Madam Chair, that completes the spreadsheet.
very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Walls. And we will, the plan was to have the nonpartisan staff walk through the entire bill and then take questions, but Mr. Walls, don't go away just yet. So just in case anybody, you know, I realize that, especially if you're not used to reading these spreadsheets, or but if you have a question about, like, what's on the sheet, a question for Mr. Walls, I think you could ask it right now while he's here and while it's fresh in your mind. Right, not seeing any. So let's go through, we'll have nonpartisan staff go through the rest of the bill, and then we'll have a time for members to ask questions. So next we will ask Mr. Johnson to walk us through articles, I think, 1 through 4, Mr. Johnson is going to do. Thank you.
Yeah, Chair Liebling, Chair Scott, and members, I'm going to highlight one section in Article 1. The rest of it is connected to the spreadsheet you just heard through. And then I'll walk through Articles 2, 3, and 4 before asking you to recognize Mr. Hopkins to walk through Article 5. So in Article 1, I want to highlight Section 19. That's on page 5 of the bill, starting at line 1. This is a section that's not an appropriation. It authorizes the courts to charge private attorneys a fee for certain access to information and documents through the court's electronic portal. This is related to Representative Hudson's House File 2412, which the committee heard. And it's also connected to the appropriation to the judicial branch for its justice partner access. I'm going to turn to Article 2. Article 2 starts on page 5. Sections 1 and 2, which go from line 16 through line 24, are Representative Feist's House File 104. This extends the confidentiality protections to participants in a restorative justice program, and it requires the Office of Restorative Practices to perform additional information in its report. Sections 3, 4, and 5 are from Representative Agbaje's House File 1862. This was the Statewide Office of Appellate Counsel and Trainings Agency bill. It includes a change to the salary structure in the office, and that created the savings that Mr. Walls referenced when he went through the spreadsheet. Moving on to Section 6, this is on page 8, starting at line 26. This is Representative Scott's House File 1039. Creates a reporting requirement for the Board of Civil Legal Aid. Section 7 begins on page 9 at line 4. It establishes a reporting requirement for the Guardian Ad Litem Board. The report must include information on both employees and volunteers. It needs to identify the number of children served by Guardians Ad Litem, list the number of cases assigned and hours worked, and include information about complaints and discipline. The board has to submit the report by January 15th each year. Sections 8 through 10, that starts on page 9 at line 22 and runs on to page 11, are from the underlying House File 2300. That was the Judicial Branches bill carried by Representative Scott. It makes changes related to filing documents in St. Louis County and also the length of certain notices related to child support, custody, spousal maintenance, or parenting time. Section 11 is on page 11 at line 3. This is Representative Pinto's House File 2781. It amends the definition of custodian for the purposes of serving documents related to orders for protection. Section 12 is also from the Judicial Branch bill carried by Representative Scott. It requires conservator reports to be provided to the subject of the conservatorship and interested persons of record with the court. Section 13 is on page 14 at line 13. This is the final piece of Representative Feist's House File 104 regarding confidentiality in the restorative practices programs. The remainder of the article is sections 14 through 21. It starts on page 15 and runs to the end of this article. These are all from House File 3070. This was a bill that Representative Liebling carried. It's for the Competency Attainment Board, and these are mostly technical changes for that board. Madam Chair, I'm going to move to Article 3. Article 3 begins on page 21 at line 21. This entire article is Representative Freiberg's House File 1224. It deals with real property and foreclosures. It requires that the postponement of a foreclosure sale that is allowed in foreclosures by advertisement, which are sometimes called administrative foreclosures, be applied in the same manner as foreclosures by action, which are foreclosures that occur through a court action. The article is effective for foreclosure notices recorded on or after August 1st, 2025. I'm going to move to Article 4. This, again, was one entire bill. This was Representative Niska's House File 2233. The article starts on page 24 at line 10. This is the Uniform Special Deposits Act. It's based off a Uniform Law Commission model bill. A special deposit is a bank deposit that is intended for a person or a purpose, but is paid out based on the occurrence of an event. As of 2025, this Uniform Special Deposits Act had been adopted in Colorado, Delaware, Nebraska, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Utah, and Washington. Madam Chair, that's the entirety of Articles 1 through 4. I'd ask you to recognize Mr. Hopkins for a walkthrough of Article 5.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, Article 5 deals with government data practices. It begins on page 32 of the DE amendment. Section 1 on page 33 is the new language clarifying that responsible authorities have the ability to suspend ongoing data requests if the data requester does not show up to collect or inspect the requested data that has already been produced. Sections 2 and 3 on page 34, moving on to page 35, these provide that personal contact information regarding parents of students cannot be designated as publicly available directory information under the Government Data Practices Act and FERPA. Section 4, the new language is on page 37 predominantly. This makes members of the Metropolitan Council, high-ranking members of the Metropolitan Council, their employees, subject to the public official exemption regarding the public availability of information regarding an investigation or complaint or charge against the public employee. Section 5, this contains technical and cross-reference changes related to Section 10, the real estate private real estate information section regarding judicial officials. Section 6 on page 39, this allows the Office of EMS to share data regarding drug overdoses with the Washington-Baltimore High-Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas Overdose Detection Mapping Application Program. Sections 7, 8, and 9 are more technical cross-reference changes related to Section 10. And Section 10 is the section allowing judicial officials, and this has the updated definition that does not include employees of the Minnesota Judicial Branch, but it allows judicial officials to make personal information in their real property records private. Madam Chair, that concludes Article 5.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Hopkins, and thank you to all of the staff who worked on this, and I think everybody here knows, but I always like to say, because the public doesn't probably know, that how much work goes into a bill like this, checking it, putting it together, the revisor's office, the nonpartisan staff, so it's a lot of work, and we really appreciate that they do such a good job for us. So with that, let's go to member questions on the bill. And either for Chair Scott and I or for nonpartisan staff, are there any questions from members? Okay. We did. Chair Scott says, oh, we did really good work, right? Yeah, no one has any questions. Okay, very, very good. So now we will take testimony, and we have a few people signed up, and so we will call them up to testify, and then we'll give the public a chance to testify as well if there's anyone in addition who wants to testify. So first on my list I have Director Dan Morris from Central Minnesota Legal Services. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chairs and members of the committee. My name is Dan Morris, and I am the Executive Director of Central Minnesota Legal Services. That is a regional nonprofit legal aid organization. We are proud members of the Minnesota Legal Services Coalition and a recipient of state funding for civil legal services. Alongside nearly two dozen partner organizations, we form the Comprehensive Civil Legal Services Delivery System that reaches all 87 counties in Minnesota. Together, we provide essential legal support that upholds the dignity of Minnesotans by meeting basic human needs, securing appropriate and stable housing, ensuring family and child safety, removing barriers to employment, and helping people navigate a complex public benefits system, just to name a few. And so I'm here today to speak in strong support of funding for the Board of Civil Legal Aid. First and foremost, thank you to this committee and the taxpayers of Minnesota for increasing civil legal services funding in the last biennium. At that time, we were in a fragile and precarious position. Starting attorney salaries for staff attorneys lagged behind even judicial law clerks, which meant our job postings were largely being passed over, especially in greater Minnesota. And so thanks to your support, we've improved those competitiveness in the job market by raising salaries. And since 2021, our annual turnover rate has been cut by more than half. So we still have some ground to make up with regard to salaries compared to prosecutors and public defenders, but we're now at least in the competition. And so the value of civil legal services extends far beyond our own internal metrics. For every $1 invested in civil legal aid, the community sees a return of $4.32 in both immediate and long-term benefits. So the immediate benefits might be establishing child support, establishing public benefits, rent abatement, maybe a settlement, but it also includes the diabetic client who receives nutritional support now after civil legal services intervention in a SNAP case, and it avoids hospitalization and associated costs with that. It also includes a tenant unlawfully locked out who is restored to their home, thereby avoiding the loss of housing and emergency shelter costs, or the young adult whose identity was stolen in college, leading to a wrongful criminal record and employment barriers that through an expungement we can help reduce. So these are real stories. I've worked on these cases. I've seen them happen in my office, and they're not the exception. It's what we do every day. Still, our ability to meet the need is very limited. Over the last 4 years, as a system statewide, we've increased staffing by 10%, but yet, as of today, we're still only able to serve 45% out of eligible clients that reach out to us. 55% are turned away simply due to lack of resources. So to put that in perspective, there are 432 paying clients for every private attorney in Minnesota. As a legal aid attorney, I serve a pool of 5,773. So to visualize that, imagine the Excel arena filled to capacity, and there are three legal aid attorneys to serve that entire stadium with any civil legal need that comes up. We recognize the fiscal constraints facing this committee. We know that your budget targets are limited. We appreciate the difficult decisions that you must make. That's why your continued support means so much to us. Thank you for choosing to invest in civil legal services, for prioritizing access to justice within the broader judicial and public safety system. And thank you for recognizing that even as some of our programs face the threat of reduced or lost federal funding, that state support remains a critical foundation for the local legal aid services we provide. So we are deeply grateful to you, Madam Chairs, and the members of this committee and the people of Minnesota for your commitment to justice. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Jonah Giese. Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead and state your name and give us your testimony.
Co-Chair Scott, Co-Chair Liebling, and members of the committee, my name is Jonah Giese. I'm a legal advocate at the Minnesota Disability Law Center, which is part of Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid. I'm also the president of the Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid Workers Union, Local 529 of AFSCME Council 5. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 2300 and advocate for additional civil legal aid funding. 4 years ago, when workers at Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid came together to build a wall-to-wall union, we organized around one core principle. If we could better support our staff, we could better show up for the clients and communities we serve. For years, we saw colleagues leave legal aid, burned out after years of emotionally intensive, grueling work. Some left for higher paying jobs at the public defender's office or for the state of Minnesota. Others left the legal field entirely. As a union, we knew that this revolving door not only destroyed staff morale and put a dent in our bottom line, it significantly impacted the services that we shared with our community. We knew something needed to be done. No one pursues a career at Legal Aid for the salary. This thrifted suit jacket should attest to that. We pursue this work because we are driven by a profound sense of justice and desire to stand with our communities in solidarity with our neighbors. For many of us, we are one and the same with the communities we serve. I have colleagues that work two jobs and are facing potential eviction. I have colleagues that worry every day about what ICE might do to their mixed status families. I, myself, live with the impacts of an invisible disability every single day. And so I'm here to tell you that we, the workers of Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid, will continue to do this work and will continue to do this work with pride. But we need your help. Our organization has been buoyed by the significant investments from the legislature in years past, yet our staff still struggle to stay afloat. At the same time starting attorney salaries were raised to $80,000 a year, starting salaries for public defenders were raised even more, to $96,000 a year. We need more than just inflation-adjusted funding. We need the lifeline of transformational investment in this work. That investment will not only ensure that our workers are afforded living wages, it will impact every corner of Minnesota and provide upstream solutions to many of the social ills that this body attempts to resolve every single day. Every week, my colleagues and I support young people with autism on the brink of boarding at a hospital, vulnerable community members escaping domestic violence, and seniors facing rapacious consumer scams. More than anything, I want to continue this work. We want to continue this work. And I ask for your robust support to do so. I urge you to increase the allotted investment in civil legal services to the amount originally proposed in House File 1373. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Nathan Zacharias. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Nathan Zacharias. I'm the Technology Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'm going to speak to the judicial safety provisions in the bill, which are under Article 5, Section 10, starting on page 43 of the A25. First of all, I'd like to thank Representative Curran for a productive dialogue throughout this process and for being open to hearing counties' concerns on this. In particular, counties are thankful that this bill limits the scope of the law to judges and their families. We know that many public-facing employees with difficult jobs may seek these protections in the future, and allowing counties to adapt to this new law with a smaller group of applicants will ensure a more efficient and effective process. We have two items for the committee to consider as this bill moves through the process. The first is related to the $40 application fee starting on line 47.17. We submitted a letter to the committee and there's a detailed breakdown in that letter in your packets, but we did recently survey county employees to see how much time it would take to redact or mask these property records and how much employees doing this work are paid. And the estimated range that we received from counties large and small was $200 to $3,000 per property. And again, this depends on county size and employees and records kept. We would ask the committee to consider language to help offset some of these costs. The second item that we have today is related to liability. Counties do remain concerned that if this law is the basis for additional groups of employees, that county's legal liability would grow significantly with each additional group. And we would suggest an exclusive remedy of a civil fine as one possible way to mitigate this liability. With that, Madam Chair, we hope you'll consider these suggestions and thank you for your time today.
All right, thank you for your testimony. Okay. I think that's all we have signed up to testify, but if there are any other people in the audience who would like to testify on the DE amendment, please step forward. Okay, I don't see people jumping out of their seats to come and testify. So with that, we will close the testimony and take member questions and discussion. Okay, don't save it for the floor. If you have it now, we'd like to know. Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair Liebling and Chair Scott. I'll just chime in and say thank you both so much, chairs, for your leadership in this committee. It's been a tough session for every committee, given the budget targets that we have, but I appreciate the work that you both have done for this committee to try to get as many priorities funded as we are able to, and just in general for a nice committee that we've had thus far, and I appreciate both of your leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Curran. Other member comments, questions? All right, not seeing any. I think you all maybe want some time back in your lives here. We're going to end so early. With that, I guess I would, on Thursday, as I said before, we'll be taking official action. So remember, the deadline for amendments is 4:00 tomorrow. So if you are thinking of an amendment, please reach out to nonpartisan staff sooner rather than later so they have time to get the amendments completed and in. And, just to say, I'm sure we will have an author's amendment. There are little pieces as you go through that you kind of collect this little thing we'd like to change and that little mistake. But, it's been really a pleasure working with Co-Chair Scott, and we're not done yet, but, I really appreciate the collaborative process we've had, and perhaps helped along a little bit by the fact that we didn't have much money to spend, because really I think our overarching goal here is to try to be fair with what we have, which is very little. And we realize that there are a lot of needs here, and certainly employee compensation, for example. We feel that employees, deserve to stay even with inflation for sure, and we're actually not doing that in this budget. But we did really try to be fair and take the resources we had and distribute them across all of the folks that we're responsible for. So with that, Chair Scott, did you want to say something?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I just want to say a big thank you to Representative Liebling and our staff and nonpartisan staff who just did a yeoman's work really the end of the last week and helped this whole thing to come together. And I know we weren't able to give raises as we had wished, but we did try to hold people harmless as far as any more insurance funds coming out of their paychecks, that sort of thing. We really tried to be cognizant of the cost of that. So we were trying to hold people as harmless as we possibly could, and just realizing that we did have budget constraints. And I hope folks will take that into consideration when they think about this bill. And it's just a pleasure to work with you, Madam Chair, and I look forward to finishing up with this. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Scott. And so, that sort of makes me think maybe I should just explain a little bit of our thinking here. As you're looking at the spreadsheet, the reason that we've pulled out lease costs for a lot of the agencies is, as we were trying to figure out how to be fair in distributing the funding, We knew a lot of the agencies gave us their specific lease costs, and so we figured that has to be paid. Everybody has to pay for their lease. So we kind of put that on the sheet first and then said, what do we have left for compensation, and then distributed that across pretty much across everybody else. So that's why lease costs are pulled out. And then I know there was some question about sort of like who's getting raises and so on. The reason that we've done it the way we have, insurance and compensation kind of together, is that as I learned through this process, kind of the way the agencies do it, they may give their employees increases sometimes by paying part of their insurance costs, sometimes by paying something in their paycheck. And so we're really, given how little money we have available, we're giving each agency the ability to be flexible on that. We realize that it's not going to go very far, but at least they can do with it what they think is the most effective and fair thing within their agencies. So does that raise any questions from anybody? No. Okay. So with that, and we will, I think, I don't expect, given today, I don't expect we'll have tons of amendments, so we probably will have time for more thank yous and on Thursday. So with that, we are adjourned.